Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. Another cargo plane crashes in Malakal town earlier today.
This incident happens in Malakal. It is too soon to know what was the cause and more details of the incident.
And South Sudan struggles to go digital.
You now need to transform and use ICT to move you to a mechanized kind of agriculture and then move you then towards using agriculture for changing your people, what they eat, their health, their nutrition.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A World Food Program cargo plane crashed shortly after takeoff in Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal, today. It is the second cargo crash in South Sudan in the space of a few days. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports.
WFP Public Information Officer George Famian in Juba says the plane that crashed is used by UN Humanitarian Service for logistics in South Sudan, including Malakal. It crashed about 2 kilometers from the Malakal airport. Famian says everybody on board survived and says no one was seriously injured.
The only people on board were 4 crew members who are all alive, and they have been rescued from the site of the incident. At this time, we believe that none of them was grievously injured. That's what we know for now. But they've all been taken to the clinic of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, that's UNMISS in Malakal.
It's still unclear what caused the crash of the plane. Famian says WFP and partners will provide more details on that.
This incident happened in Malakal. It is too soon to know what were the cause and more details of the incident. I would prefer that we try to, while the organizations are working on identifying what happened and to have a better information, then we'll be able to provide those details.
Famian says the cargo plane is a British-manufactured plane. Last week, a Russian-built plane crashed shortly after takeoff from Juba International Airport. For VOA News, I'm Tito Justin in Washington.
South Sudan's Ministry of Transport, Roads and Bridges announced today that the black box and data recorder of the Russian Antonov plane that crashed shortly after takeoff from Juba Airport last week has been recovered. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
Kwang Danher Galuak says his team of investigators, with the help of experts from the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, recovered the voice recorders on Saturday at the site of the plane crash.
We went on search on Thursday, Friday. Saturday, lucky enough, we got the cockpit voice recorder, the CVR, and the FDR flight data recorder, and the radio altimeter recorder, RAR. So this is a big breakthrough that will give us the clue on what happened on that ill-fated flight.
A Russian Antonov and 12 cargo plane destined to Paluj oil area in Upper Nile State crashed last week in the capital of Juba, shortly after takeoff from Juba International Airport. 36 people have been confirmed dead by the Red Cross after the crash. Only 2 people survived, a young child and a man. Galuak says a 4-member technical investigative team he launched shortly after the crash is continuing its investigation to learn more information about what caused the crash.
They will be able now to advise us into their field to examine, the area of the crash site, of if there is any forensic evidence and so forth. And then the next move is to analyze the black box.
Galuak says his ministry will work with the Russian officials where the plane was manufactured to study the voice recorders to help figure out the cause of the crash. It is still unclear why several passengers, including women and children, were on board a cargo plane. Meanwhile, Galuak says he has suspended operations of 2 Antonov planes in South Sudan and ordered investigations into their airworthiness. He says the Civil Aviation Authority is carrying out the investigations. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The South Sudan Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services says technology could grow rapidly and benefit South Sudan if the government invests in educating young people. Rebecca Joshua Okwachi says the country has contributed $200,000 to Smart Africa, an initiative which grew out of the Transform Africa Summit held in 2013. As Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba, many challenges remain, including overcoming South Sudan's high illiteracy rate.
The Transform Africa Summit is a platform which brings together Africa's top political and business leaders to try to shape the continent's digital transformation agenda. The summit was hosted this year by Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who is hailing from the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and the African Union Commission. Participants at this year's summit shared experiences and renewed their commitments toward accelerating Africa's digital revolution by tracking the progress of Smart Africa, an initiative formed 2 years ago to help countries like South Sudan improve their technology sector. Telecommunications Minister Okwachi says her country will benefit from Transform Africa in all sorts of ways.
For example, if we are talking about agriculture, instead of just living on subsistence and cultivating behind your house, you now need to transform and use ICT to move you to a mechanized kind of agriculture and then move you then towards using agriculture for changing your people. What they eat, their health, their nutrition, their storage, even export.
The minister says that will only happen if people are able to assess that information and apply it to their daily lives. She says the $200,000 that South Sudan has contributed to Smart Africa is a critical first step toward realizing that goal.
There will be some call for youth or men or women to benefit from that money to study ICT. So South Sudan may get an opportunity.
Okwachi says her ministry will supervise teaching digital literacy to young South Sudanese. But she says it won't be easy, given South Sudan's highest rate of illiteracy.
I'm a former deputy minister of education, and I know what it means. And if I lie, you will tell me in your household there are only 3 people who have gone to school and some have not gone. It's a reality. Even in my own house, there are people who have not gone to school. The outside world is moving, so you cannot remain here illiterate digitally, and you want to interact with others.
The minister says he's working hard to ensure that South Sudan is connected to fiber optic cable from Kenya to provide internet to users in South Sudan. She says her ministry is also moving to build more communication towers nationwide to connect the country's 10 states with mobile phones.
But I want to be frank with you. You need money to facilitate some things. You cannot get things for free in the market because people love you. You need also skills. And also we want our young people, men and women, to grow and to improve and to train so that they are able to compete in the with the other countries in this world.
Okwachi says she believes that South Sudanese youth, unlike their parents, whose education was interrupted by the 22-year-long South Sudanese war, will have a chance to compete globally. She says ICT classes at the University of Juba are innovative, and students will have the ability to develop applications. This year, Transform Africa Summit was held a few weeks ago in Kigali, Rwanda, where African leaders renewed their commitment to go digital and improve lives of their citizens. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Police have demolished a Presbyterian church in Bor. Church leaders admit they built the church on a land that did not belong to them, but say they should have been given more time to find another place to worship. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from the state capital, Bor.
The Langbar Anglican Church in Block 72 was torn down by about 20 hired workers on Friday. The police were on hand to prevent any clash from breaking out. Pastor says up to 800 people would pray at the church before fighting spread to Bor in late 2013 when conflict erupted and displaced most of the town's residents. Martha Nyalwangdeo, the church archdeacon, says 2 months ago, senior SPLM ruling party member Antipas Nyong Kucha approached them, saying the land belonged to him and asked them to back the church by the end of last week. While acknowledging Langbar Anglican Church did not own the land, Nyalwak says the government has not responded to their repeated requests for help. She says after meeting with Kucha, she and another church leaders asked the state land commissions and Ministry of Physical Infrastructure to give them a piece of property where they could build another church. She says the government offered no response until now.
The government responded that they will allocate land for us, and that's what I know. But he just came with policemen and demolished the church.
But Kucha, who is a member of SPLM Political Bureau, denied he gave the congregation only 2 months to vacate his land. He says he has been waiting a full year for church to vacate his land. Kucha says he finally obtained a court order to evict the church.
That the structure is in an illegal place. You cannot construct a church in somebody's plot. You can get a plot officially from the government. You don't come and get somebody's plot and make illegal construction.
Bowtown Police Inspector Colonel Ajeng John Jok says the police were simply following a judge order.
This one is not from my office. It's from the judge office. Their pastor was there in the court and he was given a letter. Then we are carrying out the order only because if you know my nature, my work.
Mayan Makir, the church defense lawyer, says he attended a court session regarding the matter a few weeks ago, but was surprised to learn of the demolition on Friday. He says the judge made the decision to demolish the church in a court proceeding that he and the church's pastors did not attend.
That's why the pastor in church appealed against the decision of the second grade judge, while second grade judge, based on the law, they don't have right to proceed or to decide in the case of the land based on the Land Act, Section 99, because it's an issue of the High Court. They proceed and they pass in the absence of the owner of the land.
Bo resident Peter Deng Arok attend the church that was demolished. He says congregants will be okay because they are believers.
The church, God's faith. Those who are making the word of God are always the peacemakers. So though the church has been demolished, we are still feeling good because we are believers. Because any believer will feel good though there is death or good thing that has been done to him or her. We must still feel good because as church members, we cannot remain, as God says.
Archdeacon Nyalwak says they established the church in 2007 when thousands of returnees arrived in Bowtown following the signing of comprehensive peace agreement, which led to South Sudan's independence. It is still not clear if the government will give the church leaders a new plot of land to build another place of worship. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the environment and how it affects our lives. That story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
If you were invisible for a day, what would you do?
Well, first, I would spy on people. People pretend to be who they're not. So I would like to know them clearly and know what their really intentions are. So if I was invisible, I think I would spy on people.
If I was invisible for a day, let me see, I would go and do something nice for somebody and make them smile, even if they don't know who did it, but make life better for somebody.
If I was to be invisible for a day, I would go to my country and talk to our leaders to bring in peace in the country, because they're in charge. People get to listen to them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about greenhouse gases. The World Meteorological Organization reports greenhouse gas concentration in the atmosphere last year hit a new high, and this year looks as though it will be another record-breaking year for gases, which cause global warming. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the WMO Greenhouse Gas Bulletin in Geneva.
The WMO warns of a relentless rise in the greenhouse gases fueling climate change. During the past 25 years, the agency says there has been a 36% increase in the warming effect on Earth's climate. This is due principally to carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. WMO Secretary General Michel Jarraud says these long-lived gases are making the planet more dangerous and inhospitable for future generations.
Every year we have been reporting that we are breaking new record. Every year we say that time is running out, and this year just adds to this pressure. And it's very important that these figures are taken into account by the negotiators.
Jarraud says he sees political momentum building among negotiators who will meet in 3 weeks at a climate conference in Paris. Their aim is to adopt an agreement to tackle climate change, but he tells VOA he is not optimistic about the final result.
The commitments which are on the table are not yet enough to stay within this 2-degree target which was agreed.
Jarraud is referring to national commitments to cut carbon gas emissions, which will not limit global temperature rise to 2 degrees Celsius this century. He notes carbon dioxide, the main greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, is responsible for 83% of the total increase in global warming during the past 10 years. He says it will not be possible to halt climate change without making significant cuts in gases like this one. WMO Chief Jarraud calls CO2 an invisible but real threat, saying its continuous rise is causing hotter global temperatures and more extreme weather. He says the speed with which this is happening must be stopped and that sticking to business as usual is not an option. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in East Africa, the countries of Uganda and Kenya are bracing for impact of El Nino. In Uganda, government is preparing for massive flooding and landslides and already dealing with a cholera outbreak. People living in slum areas are at high risk, as we hear from Elizabeth Pollard for VOA from Kampala.
Uganda is experiencing some of its most volatile weather in 20 years. This is due to El Nino, a global climate phenomenon that occurs when surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean warm and redirect usual wind patterns. Godfrey Majuni, a manager at Uganda's Meteorological Data Center, says rains will continue through what should be the dry season.
Of course, our analysis was based on the evolution of El Nino, and we are still monitoring this El Nino because it has not decayed at all. It is still there. If El Nino continues to be strong, then we expect a wet January and February, which are always dry months here in Uganda. Whereas in other areas, of course, El Nino is associated with, you know, warm and dry conditions. But here in East Africa, El Nino is associated with enhanced rainfall.
Heavy rains have already led to a cholera outbreak that has killed 6 people in western Uganda. And residents in rural mountainous areas prone to mudslides have been asked to vacate their homes. Large rain-induced mudslides in these areas in 2010 and 2012 left hundreds of people dead or missing. In Kampala, a number of wetland systems around the city are responsible for drainage during periods of increased rainfall. However, both legal and illegal construction have impeded the flow of water. A recent report by the World Bank blames weak regulatory control for the deterioration of the wetlands, saying lack of oversight has left Kampala's residents at risk. Peter Kaju, a spokesman with the Kampala Capital City Authority, says they are working to combat this problem.
The major challenge still exists, you know, people dumping in drainage channels, and at the end of the day they are clogged, so there's no smooth flow of water. But we have carried out mass sensitization in these communities, and we go to them, we share with them, we tell them what the repercussions are. These are some of the activities that actually stand in the way of water flow, storm water flow.
He says they have also raised some structures in wetland areas and along drainage channels. Uganda has increased disaster management teams both in Kampala and around the country. Yet with rainfall expected to increase in coming months, even preventative measures could leave some of the nation's poorest residents with nowhere to go. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
Russia should be banned from competing in athletics. That's a stark conclusion after a report from commission set by the World Anti-Doping Agency to look into allegations of corruption in Russian sport. The investigation claimed that Russia is in effect running a state-sponsored doping program, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
From the peaceful surroundings of Geneva, the World Anti-Doping Agency set off a new earthquake to shake the foundations of global sport. Accusations that Russia has for years been conducting a state-supported doping program in athletics. Dick Pound is head of the commission looking into the allegations.
We have found cover-ups, we found destruction of samples in the laboratories, we found payments of money in order to conceal doping tests. Among others.
Pound said the Russian State Security Service, the FSB, was present at anti-doping laboratories, part of a wider pattern of direct intimidation and interference by the Russian state. The commission called on Russia to be banned from athletics competition.
The outcome may be that there are no Russian track and field athletes in Rio. I hope that they get they recognize that it's time to change and make those changes.
Moscow's Minister for Sport strongly denied the allegations. Russia finished second in the London 2012 Olympics medal table behind the United States. Pound said the event had been sabotaged by the laissez-faire attitude taken by the International Association of Athletics Federations, or IAAF. The newly elected head of that body, Sebastian Coe, vowed Monday to clean up the sport, but admitted it would be a long road.
I've asked my council to convene on Friday this week. We will review what they have said, and then we will look at the next steps, which could include sanctions.
The IAAF Council has 27 members, most of them famous names, who now hold Russia's fate in their hands, says sports historian Philip Barker.
These people are big figures in athletics, and they have been charged with looking at what they're going to do, what their response would be.
Barker added that when Coe was asked would he ban Russia, the IAAF head said never say never. Henry Richwell for VOA News, London.
South Sudanese grandparents are traditionally valued and respected members of the society. They shape society and help young people maintain their culture. Two South Sudanese grandmothers who are living in Australia say although they have made their homes abroad, their hearts are still in South Sudan. They are calling on South Sudanese back at home and in the diaspora to preserve their culture. Ayen Bior has more.
The average South Sudanese grandparent has lived through both Sudanese civil wars. They have celebrated the independence of their country. They've raised their families, and some of them have watched their grandchildren grow up in foreign countries. We talked to two South Sudanese grandmothers in Australia who say they are concerned that their children's children are forgetting their culture. They also worry that their home country is being torn apart by decades of fighting. Regina Thiep hails from Awil and now lives in Melbourne, where she raised her children and grandchildren for more than two decades. Speaking in her native Dinka, she says she prays every day that the people back home will begin to respect their own country.
We prayed for this land, yet today, the way our home is, there is no hospitals. People walk barefoot. There is no access to education. These are the bad things with us. And we long to meet our homeland. We are happy when we go back home. But the people back home reject us. But we love our country. And even though when we go home, we get rejected and we return, our heart is still at home. And we want to see development. For example, today we see our car accidents are killing our people. There are no good roads. With good roads, in case of accidents from the cars, the injured person can be taken to the hospital and the life can be saved.
She says the people back home think they are too westernized, that those in the diaspora are better than them, which of course she says is not true. Abuk Bala is another Australian South Sudanese grandmother from Awil who lives with her family in Melbourne. Speaking in Dinka, she says she too often thinks about going back home.
Even though you see a person living here,
It is just the physical body which resides here, but the heart has returned home, and we shall still return home, our homeland. We will return to our homeland to live there. This place where we reside is not our homeland. It is foreign, a white man's land.
Thiep says times have changed dramatically. She says she wants to pass her hard work ethic onto her children. She believes that working around the clock has helped her to provide a good place for her children to live in Australia. But she says the strict child abuse laws in Australia have prevented her from disciplining her children.
The way of living in South Sudan and the way of living here is different. Back home, we respected ourselves, but here, children have no respect. Our children have picked up bad manners. Children don't listen. Children here have no respect. The children in South Sudan are respectful.
Bola says it is her faith in God and hope for a better future that keeps her going strong. She says she wants her people to remember the pain and suffering and the lives lost for South Sudanese to obtain their own country.
So, my brothers, I have nothing much to say other than please take heart. The land belongs to us. It is our homeland. Should it claim your lives, it is still our homeland. The land where the Creator created us in. May the Lord be with you and also with me. And thank you.
Both grandmothers are hopeful that South Sudan will one day be a peaceful nation. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus. Editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A World Food Program cargo plane crashed shortly after takeoff in Upper Nile State's capital of Malakal today. It's the second cargo crash in South Sudan in less than a week. A WFP spokesman in South Sudan says the plane was used by UN Humanitarian Services for logistics. It crashed about 2 kilometers from the Malakal airport. All 4 crew members survived. The South Sudan Minister of Transport, Roads and Bridges says his investigative team has recovered the black box data recorder of the Russian plane that crashed shortly after takeoff from Juba Airport last week that killed 36 people. Only 2 people survived, a child and a man. And finally, police in Jonglei State's capital of Bor demolished the Langbar Anglican Presbyterian Church on Friday. Workers were ordered to tear it down by officials who say the land belongs to a private individual, not the church. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Alamat Sudan by Mo Attack Mo. We have been listening to Mo Attack Mo with the song Alamat Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.